This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about pushing for change. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. A lot of people want to push for changes within themselves. It can be really hard to do and hard to stick with. That's been the experience of Pulse reporter Liz Tung. She struggled with procrastination her entire life and had given up hope of changing. But then she came across somebody who said they had discovered a solution. Here's Liz.
I am a chronic procrastinator. I always have been. I have this memory of being 8 or 9 years old, sitting on the floor of my bedroom at like 11 p.m. with my mom, as she, angrily, no doubt, was helping me finish some project I had either forgotten about or procrastinated on. It just got worse in high school. That's when I started staying up till 2, 3, and 4 in the morning, finishing essays and chem labs and math homework. By college, I was writing entire 15 to 20 page papers starting at 2 a.m. the night before they were due. And then, for some reason, I chose a career where my life revolves around deadlines. At some point, I figured I must just like the excitement of panic-induced flurries of work. But the reality is, it is torture. Extended torture. Knowing I have to get something done, but somehow not being able to get started.
Okay, so it is about 12:30, and I really should start working on my script.
Fast forward to an hour and a half later.
Okay, so I was planning on starting now, but I just remembered there is this other assignment that I probably should get the ball rolling on.
I usually put off tasks that I know are going to be hard and fill my day with busy work until I absolutely 100% need to knuckle down. It's exhausting and stressful. I hate it. I have tried and failed to change. So I'd pretty much accepted that this is just the way I am. Change will never happen. There is no escape. Or is there?
Honestly, it was kind of overnight. It was pretty much instantaneous.
This is David Maloney. He's a psychologist who says about 8 years ago, he managed to completely kick his chronic procrastination habit. But first, he had to hit rock bottom, grad school.
Really, the interesting thing about it was a perpetual guilt cycle. So I would make these big elaborate plans about everything I was going to try and accomplish for the week ahead. And invariably, it wouldn't work.
Sounds familiar. For years, at the start of every week or every month, I would craft these master life plans. Not only am I going to stop procrastinating, I am going to level up my entire life. I'm going to schedule each and every day down to the minute so I can fit in all this fantastic productivity that I'm right on the verge of.
I actually refer to it as the good intentions plan because it looks awesome. You know, it looks fantastic. It's really impressive.
There's just one problem with good intention plans. They don't work. They're too big, too ambitious. And inevitably, they lead to feelings of failure. That voice inside your head that's going, of course you failed, just like always.
It's this sort of internal bully we have that says you need to do it, you have to do it, you should have done it yesterday. And it's that kind of narrative that puts all this pressure on us. And with that building pressure, it's harder to take the action.
It was reflecting on this inner bully, or inner dialogue, as David calls it, that led to his first big epiphany. This wasn't about time management for him. When he thought about all the guilt and shame and anxiety surrounding his procrastination, his psychological training clicked into place, and he realized that both the causes and the effects of his procrastination went a lot deeper.
This must be about self-esteem. Because if I'm doing things that are constantly making me feel guilty about myself, well, maybe there's a part of me that's acting this out in order to prove that there's something wrong with me.
Now, that might seem a little overly dramatic. It's natural to put off something hard or unpleasant in favor of something fun. But David says the constant making and breaking of plans can have a really harmful effect. Because we're not only constantly beating ourselves up for failing, we're actually losing faith in our own word. David compares it to canceling on a friend. You say you'll be there in 15 minutes, then 30, then an hour. Finally, you text them that you're not going to make it. You broke your promise. In fact, you broke multiple promises. And now your friend has lost trust in you. Not only that, they feel disrespected and devalued.
But we make these promises to ourselves all the time. And it's in breaking those promises repeatedly that we're kind of undermining our self-trust, our own self-esteem, our own authority.
At this point, David would be feeling terrible and guilty, which in turn would just lead to more procrastination, as if he was punishing himself for having failed to get his work done the day before by procrastinating more. David realized that his emotional response to this constant stream of have-tos and should-haves wasn't having the intended effect. Instead, it was actually making him less willing to get started on work.
First of all, the part of me that really wants freedom and autonomy in my life is going to resist that. It's going to rebel against it. But the other problem with it is that if I go and do it from that sense of obligation and needing, feeling I have to do it, the real problem is then it doesn't do anything for my self-esteem.
When you actively decide to do something and then you do it, ideally, you should get a little pulse of satisfaction. You've just demonstrated to yourself that you are trustworthy. You are that competent, reliable person who gets things done. If, on the other hand, you put it off until you're absolutely forced to do it, it does not feel like a choice. There's no feeling of self-efficacy or pride or satisfaction, which means there's no validation. David now knew that guilt and low self-esteem were the motor driving his procrastination, which meant his first priority needed to be changing his inner dialogue from one of guilt and bullying to one of security and empowerment. One of the first big changes David made was to build in time for play and relaxation. At first, this felt totally counterintuitive to David.
If you looked at me when I was chronically procrastinating, well, what would you find? You'd find someone watching TV. You'd find someone watching movies or playing video games or something. Which normally you would say, well, that guy's having fun there, right? He's doing fun things. But the problem is, because of the procrastination, there's always this little voice in the back of your mind that's making you feel guilty about it.
So one of the first steps David recommends to procrastinators trying to change their ways is to actually schedule play into their day, transforming it from a source of guilt into a sanctioned form of self-care. And in doing so, to change that harmful inner dialogue of have-tos and should-haves into something more like this.
I can choose to do this. I prioritize guilt-free play in my life, and my productivity is very easily achieved. I don't need to push myself. I can relax. The more I relax, the more productive I become.
Part two of David's solution feels even more counterintuitive, at least to me. Basically, it boils down to setting boundaries with yourself surrounding work. Instead of repeatedly making and breaking promises to get started, I'll do it at 7, no, I'll do it at 8, actually, I'll get started at 9. He recommends putting hard limits on your work time, as in, my workday ends at 7 p.m. and no work will be done after that point. Even more shocking to my procrastinator's brain is this rule: set firm work times and don't compromise. If you say you'll start working at 10 a.m. and you don't, then you have lost your chance to work for the day. I know this sounds crazy, and it only works if you have flexibility in your schedule or your deadline isn't the next day. But David says this is how you remove yourself from the procrastinator's hell of uncertainty and indecision and show yourself that there are consequences to procrastinating. It's how you train yourself to keep your word. But what happens if you sit down to work and you just can't do it?
One of the rules is that there is no such thing as an unproductive work session. Sometimes that little struggle is because it's complicated. Maybe it's creative work. It's not easy work. And it's sometimes, and maybe you just write something or you produce something and it's not high quality. You have to be willing to give yourself permission to have an unproductive, not great productivity session.
It all might sound like a high-risk strategy, but for David, it's worked. 8 years in, he remains procrastination-free, and more importantly, says his quality of life is way better.
Much less pressure, much less anxiety, I find myself constantly being surprised about how much I'm able to do in a given day.
That story was reported by Liz Tung. David Maloney's book is called Procrastination Decoded: How to Overcome Procrastination by Ending the Guilt Cycle, Building Self-Respect, and Adopting the Now or Never philosophy.